This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Let's continue our coverage of the coronavirus as local governments and Washington strive to curb the tide. Last night, in his White House press briefing, President Trump said this.
Massachusetts, we're dealing with the governor very strongly, and we're trying to get things to Massachusetts as rapidly as possible.
Then just this afternoon, Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker said 1,000 ventilators from the federal government are on their way, and protective gear from the feds has started to arrive.
Over the weekend, we also received a shipment of PPE from the Strategic National Stockpile. Deliveries began on Saturday and have continued through Sunday, and the warehouse has been inventorying items throughout the weekend.
So for more on what Washington is doing, we're joined now on the line by Massachusetts Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley, who represents the 7th Congressional District. Congresswoman, welcome to Radio Boston.
Good to be with you.
So first, Congresswoman, you tested negative for COVID-19 recently. You did end up having seasonal flu, which is awful in and of itself. How you doing?
I feel good, and that certainly is a credit to the people at MGH. And ostensibly, I was just experiencing some flu-like symptoms, and in light of the fact that I do have asthma and had been in contact with a colleague who had tested positive, when my symptoms were not improving, I contacted my PCP, following the guidance by the CDC and everything else in the public square right now by healthcare professionals. And she had sort of online triaged me. That's the process where they figure out, based on the symptoms that you have, what categorization you fall into. And from that, they determine if she should be referred to testing, and they decided that I should be. And I do just want to take a moment just to thank the compassionate, safe, efficient, incredible team over at MGH. There were dozens more people that were there being tested that day, and they treated us all with great care, safety, and efficiency.
That's actually really good to hear. Fellow Congressperson Seth Moulton is self-isolating. He was told that based on the strengths of his symptoms, he didn't qualify for a test. But I wonder if you've been in touch with him or others in Congress who might have COVID-19, because it is beginning to spread throughout Congress.
Well, I'm certainly in regular communication with all of my colleagues, because everyone is still working, you know, doing everything that we can, even those that might have the flu, or and even those who had tested positive. So we're all in a very close communication and continue to have briefings. And today we even, our committees have been convening, our Democratic caucus. So we're on the phones all day and regularly checking in with one another.
So we heard from the top, Congresswoman, from both President Trump and Governor Charlie Baker. I'd like to get your take on how you feel both are handling the crisis and how confident you feel Massachusetts is able to proceed in getting, you know, the personal protective equipment we're going to need as we anticipate a surge.
Well, look, no one wants to be playing catch up in the midst of a pandemic, but that is exactly what we're doing. I don't want to use this time to enumerate what I consider to be the failings and the shortcomings of the Trump administration. Instead, I will focus on what has been happening in Massachusetts. And I have been in touch daily with our local elected officials, as well as our community health centers and hospitals on the front lines. I've been working diligently with partners at every level of government to marshal resources, to coordinate our response, to provide guidance, and to do whatever we can to keep our communities and our neighbors safe. I do want to take a moment just to thank those frontline workers, which include our grocery store employees, our postal carriers, our first responders, our doctors and nurses. And I'd be remiss if I'd not acknowledge the fact that, you know, something like 160 of our healthcare workers have tested positive for COVID-19. Let's keep them in our prayers. And also the surviving family members of the 48 Massachusetts residents whose lives we've been robbed of. I do want to thank Governor Baker for issuing a stay-at-home order. I want to ask everyone to please take this order seriously. It was the right call to make. It was the necessary call to make. So do not leave your home except to go to the grocery store or to the doctor. And so we've all been in close communication with each other. And because we have been in such close communication, it directly informed the things that I fought for in our third package, the CARES Act, to attempt to mitigate the hurt and to meet the scale and scope of this pandemic.
What do you think that package will do for the residents and businesses of Massachusetts, Congresswoman? President Trump last night in the Rose Garden was proud of the package, talked about the $2.2 trillion, what it's going to do, and also how it will affect the government's efforts to keep casualties under 200,000 people. Let's listen.
So you're talking about 2.2 million deaths, 2.2 million people from this. And so if we could hold that down, as we're saying, to 100,000, it's a horrible number. Maybe even less, but to 100,000. So we have between 100 and 200,000. We all together have done a very good job.
Will the $2 trillion rescue package help with that dimension of this pandemic? And are you pleased with what's in it?
Well, I have to take a moment because I'm so, I'm just affected by that clip that you just played there. The reason why I've referred to Donald Trump as the occupant is because I do feel he's occupying the Oval Office, but he is not embodying the attributes necessary for a president, and that is to offer a balm, a salt, comfort. I was reading an article earlier today, and they were saying that one of the first, potential casualties in a crisis is the casualty of trust. And he has not done anything to engender or foster trust. There's been just so much misinformation. This pandemic was not taken seriously at the outset. And so no one wants to be playing catch up, certainly not in the midst of a pandemic. We do find ourselves in unprecedented times, which demand an unprecedented response. I think that we had an opportunity with a $2 trillion bill to fundamentally address not only the hurt that we're seeing on the front lines and in deep in community because of this pandemic, but to really address persistent inequities and disparities. I mean, every socio-political fault line or socioeconomic fault line in our society has been exacerbated in this moment. And so with a $2 trillion bill, we really did have an opportunity to fundamentally address these persistent inequities and disparities, both in our healthcare system and our economy head on. We had an opportunity to make testing and treatment free and accessible for all, as well as unemployed emergency paid leave, and to make it truly universal. And this bill, it doesn't do that.
I do wonder, Congresswoman, given the fundamental philosophical differences in Congress about those structural issues, and given the speed and sort of sense of need of getting a bill passed, was it realistic to think some of those more profound structural changes could have been made in that particular package?
Well, let me just say this, because I don't want to give short shrift in any way to the advocacy of, my office, my colleagues, and advocates on behalf of our most vulnerable who, again, informed the things that I fought for, which I will enumerate in a moment. What I simply wanted to say is just that this bill needed to be about bailing out our workers and our families and not corporations. And so when you talk about the fact that we'll be able to provide a cash infusion ranging of $1,200 to $2,500, and I can talk more about the eligibility for that, That is a one-time cash infusion. And so when you consider the fact that we are bailing out corporations, that's more money that we could have given directly to the American people. But let me talk about what the bill, the CARES Act, does do. And this is something that I advocated for specifically. When we talk about our healthcare response, we can't define it only by our hospitals. We have to talk about our community health centers as well. And so this is going to provide some desperately needed aid both to our community health centers and our hospitals, our workers and our families during this public health emergency. The bill, as I mentioned earlier, provides direct cash assistance. It pauses foreclosures and evictions. It will provide temporary relief to student loan borrowers, and it does get resources to some of our most vulnerable, including those experiencing homelessness, as well as incarcerated men and women. Everything that this bill does accomplish was made possible because advocates and impacted people raised their voices, government listened, and I have to just give credit to Speaker Pelosi and our committee chairs for their advocacy as well. These were very tough negotiations. And so what this bill does is provide short-term gap relief for workers, families, and small businesses.
Congresswoman, I'd love to pick up on that. We heard from Governor Charlie Baker in his daily briefing today. He was really clear with Commonwealth residents that as yet guidance had not come from Washington for how to deploy the unemployment benefits in this bill. Do you know when Massachusetts residents are going to be able to apply for, when the guidance will be there and Massachusetts residents will be able to use the unemployment provisions of the bill that was passed last week?
So this is a $2 trillion bill. You know, there's still a lot of work to be done to better understand how to best disseminate this. And that's why how the bill is set up. And it's why actually we, you know, uninsured and undocumented are left out of this, our immigrant neighbors at a time of crisis, because you do need to have a tax ID and a social security number. And it is about existing infrastructure that allows us to get that money to people directly. The agencies and what those mechanisms will look like are still being sorted out. But Secretary Mnuchin earlier today was saying that in the next 3 weeks.
So Congress, the president have been clear that this isn't the last rescue package coming. What's most important to you to see in the next bill?
Our work is certainly far from over. Again, this does stem some of the immediate hurt, and that's why we needed to get the bill out, and Congress worked hard to do that because we needed to provide that short-term gap relief for workers, families, and small businesses. The bill does leave out and leave behind our immigrant neighbors. I do think that we need more for our community health centers, also for those experiencing homelessness, incarcerated men and women. And there's always more that we can do for our small businesses, but these will be some of the top line priorities that I'll be advocating for. So just continue to fight for our most vulnerable.
And what is your message to the people hearing you today on this show and to the residents of the Commonwealth during this really challenging and unprecedented time?
Well, you know, unprecedented times demand unprecedented hope. And so I would just ask everyone to keep that and, you know, and listen to Dr. Fauci. And Dr. Fauci, we trust, you know. So everyone, just stay safe, stay healthy, you know, be kind to one another. And we'll get through this. We'll get through this. I'm so, you know, I find that by the hour, my heart, you know, breaks and is full, you know, at the same time. It's breaking, you know, that we are in the midst of this crisis, but it is full based on the community response. You know, I think of, I think the young lady's name is Gabby at St. Brendan's in Dorchester, who's personally stitching together PPE masks. You know, 24 a day. That will also be something that I'll continue to push for in this fourth package is more PPE. You know, I think of efforts like a Violence in Boston run by Monica Cannon Grant that have been, you know, providing, you know, food to families that are struggling. And my Boston City Councilors, my former colleagues who are, you know, reaching out to seniors in their districts just to check on them, you know, personally. I mean, also, you know, up until 5 days ago, we're dropping resource pages and documents and hand sanitizer on the doorsteps of our seniors and our most vulnerable. And so, you know, my heart breaks, but it's full at the same time. You know, these are uncertain times, but the one certainty that I know is that we can get through it together.
Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley represents Massachusetts 7th District. Congresswoman, thank you. I'm glad to hear that you are healthy again, and I hope you'll come back on with us soon.
I sure will. Thank you so much.
Thanks. So joining us now is WBUR senior news correspondent out of Washington, Kimberly Atkins, who listened into the conversation with us. Kimberly, welcome back.
Hi, nice to talk to you.
And let me just ask you, Kimberly, because things change every day. How are you?
I am good. In the Washington, D.C. area, slowly, officials are implementing stay-at-home orders similar to those that have been issued in Massachusetts. And so I, like many WBUR employees, have been working from our homes, but still working to give you the information about all this that our listeners need.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, and I'm glad you're with us. Let me start by just asking you to reflect on what you just heard from Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley.
I think that represents in a lot of ways what a lot of lawmakers, members of the Massachusetts delegation, and more broadly have been saying, which is this latest package that was approved over the weekend is necessary, but in no way sufficient. And I think what we will continue to see in the days and weeks ahead is those seeing those lawmakers work to push and file pieces of legislation that would expand what has already been done with this emergency bill. I mean, talking to lawmakers over the last week or so, they see it as a rescue bill, an emergency bill. This is not a stimulus package. This is something that is desperately needed, not only to keep the economy from completely collapsing, but to help people stay in their homes, stay safe, and have the resources that they need.
As a rescue bill, it is huge. It's $2.2 trillion. How will that impact the Commonwealth of Massachusetts?
Well, it does a lot of things, including some of the things that you talk about. You have that one-time payment of up to $1,200 per adult. It expands unemployment benefits and allow people to get as much as $600 more per week for unemployment if they qualify. It also eases the ability for people to tap into their retirement savings if they need to do that with fewer penalties. And it does things like have some health care, like that infusion of money into health care that Congresswoman Presley talked about. But, you know, there are still some snags. I mean, we heard Governor Baker talk today about why he, for example, is so happy that that unemployment benefit has been extended. But the state still has not gotten guidance from the federal government about how new people applying for unemployment will benefit from that. And until they do, he was asking new unemployment applicants to hold off until they get that guidance. Those are things that those hiccups in the system as this is being implemented can really severely impact people, as you saw the massive increase in the number of unemployment claims that have been filed. So there's still a lot of unanswered questions. He's still trying to get as much equipment as you can, even though the president did say he was sending that equipment to Massachusetts, and he is. Some of it is still en route, and he says he won't feel completely satisfied until it's there. So
Kimberly,
there's still a lot to be done.
What about the checks themselves? We just talked about PPE and the challenges with getting the unemployment bill portion of the bill implemented. Do we know when residents here in the Commonwealth might see those $1,200 checks?
It depends. People who have filed electronically and their information is on file, they will be the first to get it. It will be directly deposited into the accounts that they have on file. Other people, if they don't get direct deposit, if they are getting paper checks, it will take much longer. We know that the mail itself has been delayed, plus cutting of those checks will take longer. There may be things like debit cards. A lot of that still remains unclear.
So I want to talk about a big piece of news from yesterday, which was President Trump changing gears from his desire to have the economy back open by Easter. He's now saying that social distancing, the federal guidelines, will need to stay in place until April 30th. And his administration is acknowledging potential fatalities in the United States between 100 and 200,000 people. What are you hearing in reaction to that in D.C. today?
Yeah, it seems to be an acknowledgement of where we are. The president had seemed to want to ride this out for the sake of protecting the economy and sort of just letting the chips fall without fully being as robust as he could have been about stay-at-home measures, about really slowing things down and ordering things closed. He saw, after talking to Dr. Fauci over the weekend in particular, and according to President Trump yesterday, seeing images of people who had died being taken out of the hospital in Queens, New York, where he grew up, affected him. And he realized that this was more serious than he thought. He heard the dire figures from Dr. Fauci and how many fatalities that can occur if they didn't slow things down. So the president did take that reversal, of course, saying until at least the end of next month that there would not be the quote, reopening of the country, as he talked about it.
You know, we've heard a lot about ups and downs in the relationship between the president, his administration, and the governors around the country. With certain governors, he's gotten into disputes, such as the governor of Michigan. It seems like maybe some states are having better luck than others in getting procurements from the federal government. Yesterday, he started accusing some hospitals of hoarding personal protective equipment and not really needing it. What are you hearing about the nature of the relationship between the president and the governors and how that's affecting how he's thinking about PPE and equipment going out to states?
Well, what I'm hearing is that it is clear that the president's decision making is affected by politics. I've actually heard some exasperation from both Democrats and Republicans on the Hill that politics have been playing a role in that. I mean, in one case with the governor of New York, Governor Andrew Cuomo, it's sort of gone back and forth. At times they seem to be getting along, and at other times they seem to be at each other's throats. And with the governor of Michigan, Gretchen Whitmer, this is coming at a time where Detroit and the surrounding areas are becoming a big hotspot. And these are also people who tend to have lower income and not the same access to health care as others. So it's crucial to get that aid to them. But it seems the president himself said what he wanted was more gratitude from the governor in order to get that. So there's a lot of exasperation, frankly, that is playing a role here.
You heard us touch on this with Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley. Eventually, there will be another package, whether it's rescue or stimulus. Any word on what we know might be in that next bill?
We don't, and in part because so many people want so many different things, and these are the harder fights that are going to be fought. I mean, everything from more direct cash payments at higher amounts, more help for the homeless, more relief from people's personal debt or business debt or cancellation altogether of some debt and help with mortgages and rent. There are so many things that people from there are going to want for their constituencies, for their locations. And that battle is going to be difficult to fight out, especially difficult at a time where everybody has stay-at-home orders and really cannot be here in Congress and have those debates the same way they normally would. They can't hold hearings on this and get estimates the same way.
So to that point, Kimberly, are we potentially facing a constitutional crisis if Congress, there isn't remote voting really. If Congress, through the virus, cannot function the way it needs to, do we have a constitutional issue?
It depends. I mean, the members of Congress can come back and in one vote, vote to change those rules to offer more freedom to vote remotely or agree to vote by voice vote or other ways that don't require everyone to come back. We saw on Friday everybody did come back, and it was very stressful for a lot of people to have to do that. So they can change it. It would require them coming back at least one more time to do that. But even if they do come back, Tiziana, it's unclear where that debate will lead and what exactly would be in that bill. The bill that just passed was hard fought in order to get that. And so anything more, the fight will be even harder.
That's Kimberly Atkins, WBUR senior news correspondent in Washington. Thanks so much, Kimberly.
My pleasure.
So stay with us. Coming up, how the coronavirus is affecting religious and faith communities in Greater Boston and New England. How's it affecting yours? Call us. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Stay tuned. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.